Let's talk about our health. We live in the most advanced era in human history. There have never been more medical breakthroughs than there are right now. So why are millions of Americans unhealthy and overweight than ever before? According to the U.S. Board Certified Physicians and expert nutritionist Dr. Amy Lee, one of the main reasons is three harmful foods that are being passed off as health foods all over the country. Wait till you hear this, because these foods can cause weight gain, clog your digestive tract, deplete your energy, and wreck your skin. They are banned in other countries. Yet, shockingly, they're still legal in the U.S., and it's time someone shined a light on what they are. Dr. Amy Lee does just that while explaining how the side effects from those foods are wreaking havoc on the health of millions of Americans. The great news is it's easy to stop and reverse this damage by simply learning which foods to avoid and how to spot them. And by doing so, you can experience easier weight loss, smooth digestion, and vibrant energy. To find out these three fake health foods, go to 3harmfulfoods.com/X22. That's the number, 3harmfulfoods.com/X22. Click on the link in the description. After years of extensive study, Dr. Amy Lee put together a revealing video totally free to the public so you never get duped by these foods again. Find out all you need to know to regain control over your body at 3harmfulfoods.com/X22 or click the link in the description box below. Hi, and welcome to the X22 Report Spotlight. Today, we have a returning guest, Harley Schlanger. Harley is an historian, a national spokesman. He's been covering the financial industry since the 80s. You can now follow Harley at the LaRouche Organization. And I am very happy and honored to have Harley back on the X22 Report Spotlight. Harley, welcome back to the Spotlight.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for the invitation.
Hey, thanks for being here. And let me just tell you, you always have incredible information. And I think people love it when I have you on here because you have so much information. You're so knowledgeable about everything. I wanted to start off with Germany because we know Germany, they're going towards net zero. And since they've been pushing that entire agenda, the German economy started to break down. And since you're out in that part of the world, I wanted to see what was happening, what you're experiencing, and is the economy breaking down in Germany?
Well, it's interesting. The original idea of net zero was related to reduction of carbon dioxide. But in fact, net zero is now what's going on with the German economy. We're heading into the third quarter with negative growth in Germany. But it's not just negative growth. You have several factors that have caused this. One is the green regulations, which are undermining the industrial base of Germany terribly. Secondly, the high interest rates. And third, the high prices of energy because of the sanctions against Russia, the Nord Stream pipeline explosion, and so on. So that trifecta has led to a significant downturn in the powerful heavy industry sector of the German economy, the high tech. The auto industry in particular. There are mass layoffs now in some of the auto plants, the steel plants. The electricity shortage is quite severe. And at the same time, we're seeing a breakdown of infrastructure because the government doesn't have the money to repair infrastructure. So we're seeing floods that haven't happened in decades, bridges collapsing. Train derailments. It's a little bit like what has been happening in the United States with the train system.
Yeah.
So it's a full-scale breakdown. And on top of it, you have a green ideologue named Habeck, who's the economics minister. The foreign minister is the head of the Green Party, Annalena Baerbock, who's a complete nitwit. And then you have Christian Lindner from the Free Democrats, who's the finance minister, and he's an absolute supporter of the green policy. So it's looking very bad. There were about 30% of the construction companies have shut down in Germany in the last 2 years, largely because of regulations and because people don't have money to pay for housing. So it's a very serious collapse. And in the meantime, they're talking about preparing for war. So it's a war economy, which means austerity. And they're telling the people not only to be prepared for austerity, but the possibility of a draft because the German army is so small and ineffective. They're looking at all young people in Germany as possible soldiers.
Are they realizing that, listen, you tried to push us in this direction and it's destroying our country? Are the people waking up now?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
You have two aspects to that. One is we saw it with the farm demonstrations in December and January, where tens of thousands of farmers had demonstrations and tractorcades through all major German cities. And they said that if you keep these policies, the green policies, which make fertilizer and insecticides either illegal or too expensive, if you keep this up, you're not going to have food in Germany. At the same time, you have, look at the polls. Scholz, the Social Democratic Chancellor, is at about 15% right now in the polls. Baerbock and the Greens are at 12%, and Lindner's party is below 5%, which means if there were elections today, they wouldn't be able to be in the government. And what's the two parties that are growing? One is the Christian Democrats, who unfortunately are headed by a guy named Merz, who comes from BlackRock, and so he has no solution. And then the Alternative for Deutschland, the so-called right-wing party, which actually has gone from single digits up to being the second most popular party in the polls. Where I live in Eastern Germany, in Potsdam, the AfD is close to the first party. They're over 30% in the polls. And this has completely freaked out the establishment because they say the AfD is a Nazi party. Same language you hear in the United States about Trump and the MAGA movement is directed against the AfD. So the people are recognizing it. The problem is that they're passive. They are angry, but still passive. They don't think anything can change.
Which is very odd because, I mean, we've seen change in Argentina. We've seen change in El Salvador. We've seen change in the Netherlands, where we're seeing change there. I'm surprised that the people don't think that they can have change since they were in World War II and they saw what happened back then. I'm very surprised that they don't think they can change things.
Well, I've had some opportunity to meet with people on the AfD, and right now they're very much terrorized by the use of the Interior Ministry of this Nazi and anti-Semitic slander against them. Because in Germany, if you call someone anti-Semitic, it has the resonance of Hitler. And so instead of aggressively attacking the networks that are going after them, and these networks that are attacking them are the pro-war networks, the ones who are saying Germany should use the Taurus long-range cruise missiles to blow up Crimea, to attack deep into Russia. Most Germans are fearful that the government is going to provoke a Russian response against Germany, but they won't speak up. You know, we just had this week the 75th anniversary of the founding of NATO. And if you talk to educated Germans, they know what NATO was about. As the first commander of NATO, Lord Ismay, said, purpose of NATO is to keep the US in Europe, the Russians out, and the Germans down. And people know that. But they're still so much affected by the post-World War II brainwashing and the idea that if you're a nationalist, then you're somehow a Nazi. And this is the anti-sovereignty movement that comes from Soros, that comes from the World Economic Forum and so on, to make people ashamed of being for improving their nation or even loving their nation.
You mentioned that, they're thinking about drafting people, that they're talking about war. Is this war with Russia? Is that's what you're talking about?
Yeah, you have the Defense Minister Pistorius said Germany must become war ready. Now, the irony is, even as they're talking about shipping the Taurus missiles to Ukraine, the factory that produces them just shut down. They don't have the material to produce the missiles. Germany does not have raw materials. The key to the German economy has always been its relationship with Russia. And especially in the period of the Merkel years, where the cheap energy and the raw materials allowed Germany to become a powerful driver for all of Europe and the European Union. Without that connection, they're weak. And this, of course, is the old strategy going back to the beginning of the 20th century of the British, which was to divide Russia and Germany against each other so they'll never be a threat to the control of the city of London over Europe.
And what's very interesting is that Blinken, he just came out and he says that Ukraine will be joining NATO. Now,
Well, One of the military contacts I talk with in Germany says that it's hard for him to know whether Blinken is delusional or evil or both. And I think it's both.
Personally, I think they want a war. And I think by saying this or having Ukraine join NATO, this will make Putin do something. I think they're trying to push him into doing something.
Well, this is why he did the special military operation in the first place in February 2022, because of the expansion of NATO. He appealed for 14 years to stop it after the Maidan coup in 2014, which was run by who? Biden, Victoria Nuland, Soros, and the National Endowment for Democracy and the CIA. They ran the coup. They launched attacks on the Russian ethnic population in eastern Ukraine. And Putin kept saying, do something about it, stop it. And they came up with the Minsk Agreement, which was supposed to stop it. But as we know, Merkel and Hollande, the president of France, who were supposed to enforce the Minsk Agreement to give limited autonomy to eastern Ukraine, they said they had no intention of doing that. They needed to buy time to build the Ukrainian military. So the whole idea of this Ukraine proxy war against Russia is a long-term strategy to weaken Russia, to try and regime change Putin and break up the country so the raw material wealth of Russia could again be plundered by the Western oligarchy, the same way it was during the Yeltsin years. The difference is that Putin is not Yeltsin, and Russia, instead of being weakened, is becoming stronger. Now, on this question of Germany wanting war, the military-industrial complex here, to the extent it exists, is relatively weak. And the industrial associations are all saying, cut the crap, we don't want a war. But they've been too quiet up to now. I think we're at a point where we may see a change with that, because the Germans are under enormous pressure from Macron, who's another piece of work. But Macron is saying we need NATO boots on the ground in Ukraine. And the Germans are saying, are you crazy? Now, one of my African friends told me that the reason Macron is doing that is that the French Foreign Legion just got kicked out of French West Africa, out of Niger, out of Burkina Faso, out of Mali. And they're afraid if the French Foreign Legion is deployed back into France, they may overthrow the Macron government. So he wants to send them to Ukraine. So he's posturing as this tough NATO figure to threaten Russia. Now, Dave, it really is ominous when you talk about Blinken. You talk about the Americans and the British and NATO saying Ukraine is going to win this war. No one in the military in Europe believes that. If you read between the lines of these statements and if you talk to people privately, they've all said the war is lost. Why send another 60 billion American dollars? The kleptocrats around Zelensky need the money. And the kleptocrats in the military, industrial, financial complex in the West also need the money because of the overall economic crisis. But what they're doing by pushing this war is further isolating the United States.
And the thing is like when Blinken says, oh, yeah, Ukraine's going to join NATO. I remember Putin saying, listen, if Ukraine joins NATO, there could be a nuclear war. Do you think there's going to be like a nuclear standoff? Do you think they'll push it that far?
Well, I think we're very lucky that we have someone like Putin in Russia. And what I mean by that is that he's a very serious thinker, he's a strategist, and he's not going to do something stupid. However, he has made clear that even though Russia has a no first strike policy and won't do a first nuclear strike, if they feel threatened, they will use their nuclear weapons. Now, when he says that, Blinken and others say, oh, there's Putin saber rattling again, threatening nuclear war. No, he's just making clear that you know what his real red line is. And in the West, we make red lines and then let them be overcome as soon as we draw them. So, you have this, as I say, delusion, arrogance in the West. They said the sanctions would destroy the Russian economy. The Russian military is no good. The weapons from the West will allow Ukraine to win the war with the counteroffensive. All of this has been proven to be wrong. Has anyone apologized for it yet? Has this pathetic character Kirby yet said he's been wrong every single step of the way? or people like John Brennan and others who have this argument that Putin's going to overrun Europe. He told Tucker Carlson the truth. Why would he want to get into a war in Poland? He's got enough to deal with in rebuilding the Russian economy. So I think you have to look beyond Ukraine to get to the real problem, and that's where you get to the economy. The Western economy as a physical economy is moving below break even. And in order to keep it going, they're pumping funny money into the system. This is the whole reason there's an inflation. The strategy of raising interest rates has not stopped it. The problem they have is insolvency of corporations and insolvency of governments. You can't solve the problem of insolvency by printing money. You can create liquidity, but you weaken the value of the money that you're passing out. So it's a con game. It's a classic Ponzi scheme. And in order to try and save it, they're using military spending, which does at least produce some activity in the economy. And the idea that they're going to run a colonial post-war order, where they're going to continue to loot not only the countries of the developing sector, the global south, but countries like Russia and the populations in Europe and the United States who are going to be looted as this economic system breaks down.
I feel like the breakdown of the economy and them pushing war, they're kind of related, because you need some type of cover story for when the entire system completely and utterly falls apart. And I feel like we're almost at that point where the system, the amount of debt, the amount of printing, the inflation that people are seeing, the high fuel costs, of course, that is being driven by their Green New Scam that they're trying to push. It seems like this is all intertwined and they're using both.
Well, the reality is that if you look at almost every policy coming from the West, from the woke policies that are being pushed, the economic policies, the military policies, the idea that somehow you can sustain a unipolar order based on a military that is weaker than it was in the past against militaries that are growing stronger because they have a real physical economy behind them. And then you look at what's happening in countries like South Africa, the African nations, India. These are nations that have a robust economy because they're not basing it on financial printing to cover debt. They're innovating. They're doing what we used to do. And that's the secret to China's economic success. All this talk coming from Steve Bannon and people around him that China's collapsing is a bunch of hogwash. China has done what we didn't do. Part of the reason their economy stalled is they put the corrupt speculators through emergency bankruptcy. And that shut down the funny money. And it meant that the actual growth rate they have, which is now verging on 5 to 6%, is real economic growth, not financial paper, which means debt. In the West, we somehow think that debt is a creator of wealth. The only way debt creates wealth is if you're going into debt to build the physical economy, new technologies, new energy systems. But if you're going into debt to put solar panels and windmills everywhere, to shut down the agriculture sector, to move toward electric vehicles, which can't be supported with the existing system, that's debt, which is just increasing your debt in the future. And, you know, the United States was founded on an economic policy of Alexander Hamilton, who essentially said a well-managed national debt is a national blessing. And what he meant by that is that if you invest it properly, you'll be able to pay off the debt in the future by increases in productivity in the whole economy. If you go into debt to pay off debt, you're heading toward going off the cliff.
And it looks like we're going off the cliff, because that's exactly what we're doing. Let's talk about protecting your wealth. Has investing got you stressed? Is it too complicated? Well, don't leave your money in the bank. It's losing value. Get it working. Invest in precious metals with Noble Gold Investments. It's simple, real, and always there for you. Real through history's toughest times. And Noble Gold Investments American experts make it easy. If you're after an IRA and you qualify, you'll even get a free quarter ounce gold standard coin. Keep it simple. You can't go wrong with precious metals. Invest with Noble Gold Investments. Go to x22gold.com. That is x22gold.com, or click the link in the description. And remember, there's always a risk of investment and there's no guarantee of any kind.
I mean, the debt now is what, almost 35 trillion or something like that? It's
over 34 trillion, yeah. And it's growing at the fastest rate ever. And, you know, and during the Trump years when the deficit grew, people were saying, well, it was because of COVID. That was partly true. Now they're saying it's because of the war. But what Biden is saying is, well, don't worry, the economy is going to catch up with the debt payments. You know, this is the old Clinton idea of pay as you go, which was a fraud then. So virtually everyone except Trump operated from the standpoint that as long as the stock market's going up, everything's fine. But the stock market goes up when you give money to the swindlers to buy stocks of companies that are failing or not producing revenue. And that should be something so simple, but no one knows it because they have all these algorithms and fancy quantification methods, which they're using, which tell them that the inflation is actually good. The deficit spending is good. And you know, there's no rationale behind it, just as there's no rationale behind these wars. Are we more secure if we go to war with Russia or China or Iran? Not at all. If we want security, we have to negotiate and have an ability to use diplomacy from a standpoint of the strength of our economy and our word. The problem is countries no longer trust the United States because we've lied so often. And by that, I mean, I found this quite often, Dave, from the work I'm doing now, especially in the Global South. The people in countries in Africa and Asia and the Middle East like the United States. They like America. Mm-hmm. They don't like the American government. They're a lot like the American people.
And since we're talking about war and Putin, when it's funny because way back we talked about Syria, ISIS, and how Putin came in, Trump came in, they got rid of ISIS. And it's just very interesting that all of a sudden, you know, ISIS took responsibility for the concert hall attack and they were heading back to Ukraine. So it's very interesting that we're seeing a reemergence of ISIS, since Putin and Trump got rid of them in Syria. And now here they are, they're back, and Biden is in the White House, which I find very, very interesting.
Well, we never really got rid of them. They were one of the reasons the U.S. keeps troops illegally in Iraq and Syria is to protect ISIS as the so-called moderate rebels against the Assad government and against the Iraqis. You know, I'm working on an article on the continuity of the war policy of the endless war faction. And I just found an interesting quote from the Sunday Observer in London back in 2001, after the 9/11 attacks, and was talking about Tony Blair's commitment to a war on terror. Mm. And they quoted in the article an American counter-terror expert, so-called, which means someone who helped build the terrorist networks.
Yeah.
And what he said is, well, Blair is a faithful ally, and if it means we're embarking on the next 100 years' war, then that's what we are doing, and we'd better get after it. That was a quote from an anonymous American official, could have been Brennan, someone like that, who sees the terrorists as an ally of U.S. global strategic policy. Now, you mentioned the Crocus Music Hall affair. I think the two interesting things about the ISIS question. ISIS people are supposed to be suicide bombers who are looking forward to martyrdom because they're going to get 40 virgins and so on once they're dead. They don't run away. These guys ran away. And where did they run to? Ukraine. The Russians have shown there is a money trail of Bitcoin from Ukraine to the terrorists. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that you have the intelligence community in the U.S. coming out within 5 hours of the attack saying we know for sure it's ISIS-K. Well, how do they know in that quick period of time? It's almost 2 years since the Nord Stream pipeline bombing, and we still don't know, allegedly don't know, who did that. So this is psychological warfare. And this is the war on terror from the beginning was designed to end free speech in the United States, to silence opposition, and to build up a security state that would make sure that no one would get in the way of the military, industrial, financial complex. And we're seeing that now, Dave, asserting itself on this whole debate over the money for Israel and Ukraine. Israel's a wealthy nation. If they want to stay in this war, they should be able to pay for it themselves. They don't need $14 billion from the United States. As for Ukraine, they've already gotten about $120 billion on the books from the United States. Another $60 billion for what? The kleptocrats around Zelensky for their homes on the Riviera? You know, this is absurd. But we're now seeing Speaker Johnson under enormous pressure to cave in, to come up with an end-around strategy to make sure the money goes through. Now, either the MAGA forces are going to discipline him and assert their authority by saying, we're not supporting these deep state wars anymore, or else the whole question of what a second Trump administration would mean if you don't have the ability to control allies in the Congress. How are you going to control the deep state once you get in power again?
So do you think Johnson is compromised? Do you think that they found something on him? Because he's done a 180.
Yeah, and you know the weakness he had was his commitment to defending Israel. Now, in saying this, I have to say this to make it clear because there's so much crap about it. You know, in saying what I'm going to say on Israel, I'm not defending Hamas. What Hamas did was despicable, although somewhat understandable because of the way they were treated by Israel. However, the problem is that there's a whole grouping that's part of the MAGA movement, which is tied to this Christian Zionist idea that somehow Israel is going to go to war. It's going to lead to the Battle of Armageddon and the return of the Messiah. And I think it may be that that's actually the honest belief of Speaker Johnson, which if so, and he said it, if so, well, that's why he's supporting the Israel against Hamas. But by supporting Israel against Hamas, he's on the side of Biden. He's on the side of the deep state and the war hawks. And that's something that people have to realize. You can't be for one war and against another if you realize who's orchestrating the wars.
And I think people are starting to realize who's orchestrating all these wars, because I think that every day that passes, it becomes clearer and clearer that we do have a criminal syndicate, the establishment running everything. And people now see the two-tier justice system, that people see like the open borders. And it's not just people who want a better way of life, because they see the criminals coming in, they see the terrorists. And it's not just here in the United States, it's in Canada, it's in Germany, it's in France, it's in many different countries. So they see the coordination and they see who's pushing it. And I think now it's becoming very, very clear what they're trying to do and why they're bringing all these people in, because a lot of these countries now, it's chaotic in the countries with all these illegals coming in. And then they're starting to realize open borders, it doesn't work, and it destroys the country.
Well, I think part of the awakening of the population, don't underestimate what you do, Dave, and the handful of others like you who are out there every single day getting the truth out. More and more people are realizing that when you turn on the mainstream media, you're getting a stream of lies coming from the same corporate cartels that tell you Ukraine's winning the war, that Putin wants to capture Poland, and so on. You know, these lies are so blatant. And when John Kirby is up there, you know, one day he says, we warned the Russians that there's going to be a terrorist attack. And then after it happens, he said, oh, no, we didn't have any real intelligence. Well, what is it? You even the idiots in the press corps of the Washington are starting to ask questions. But it's not because they're becoming better. It's because of what you do and what we're doing with the LaRouche organization to get the truth out, to get it into the cracks so that people who want to know what's causing this, who their real enemy is, they're beginning to put things together. Because the American people are not stupid. They've been lulled into a certain sense of security, a certain passivity, and now they're seeing it being taken away from them. And, you know, what I've said for a long time, we've discussed this repeatedly, the enemies, we don't need foreign enemies. This is what John Quincy Adams once said. We don't need monsters abroad to go after. Our enemies are here at home. And it's this deep state or corporate cartels, whatever you want to call it, the ones who control what, you know, the misnomer of military-industrial complex leaves out the fact that it's not just defense corporations, but it's big pharma. It's the grain cartels. It's the media. The media, the mainstream media, is one of the biggest cartels controlling the narrative. So I'm confident that the Americans and the Germans will figure it out. What's surprising to me is how long it's taking the Italians. They haven't figured out that Meloni was basically a false promise. And some of the more serious nationalists in Italy around Salvini and the Lega Nord are starting to reassert themselves. In France, you know, we'll see what happens with Le Pen, but she was sort of being pushed to moderate her forces a little bit by the cartel. Now she's coming back out strong again. And, you know, the issue in Europe is why the sovereign nations accept the idea of the European Union, which has unelected bureaucrats making policies that benefit the City of London and the corporate cartels. And I think that's breaking down. And if it does, and you know, here's the cover story they're using. Well, if Trump gets elected, NATO's in trouble. So NATO has to become stronger today. Now, interestingly, that was what Trump was saying when he was president, that NATO's not defending itself, that it's a paper tiger.
Right.
So now here they are warning about what Trump might do when they're actually doing what Trump told them to do, except for the wrong reason. They're doing it to get in these endless wars. So, you know, the hypocrisy and the idiocy is off the charts.
So what do you think is going to happen this presidential election? We're getting closer and closer, and it looks like it's going to be Biden and Trump running against each other. And again, I don't think the deep state players, Biden, they're going to want to give up control. Do you think that they will push war, or they'll do something before the elections?
Well, that's why they're pushing war right now. That's why Biden is trying to get the $60 billion. So Ukraine doesn't collapse before November, because if Ukraine collapses, as it is collapsing, I mean, they can't find people to serve in their military. And if the Russians actually do launch an accelerated offensive, and just last weekend in the aftermath of the Crocus massacre, they took out more than half the Ukrainian power grid in one day with a handful of missiles. So the Russians are now preparing for an offensive. If Putin went ahead with it, Ukraine would buckle pretty quickly. Now, at that point, what happens? The question in the U.S. will be, who lost Ukraine? And it's clearly on Biden. You know, whatever you can say about Trump, he's not been in favor of this war. He's been speaking against it from the beginning,
right,
and warning about the corruption of the oligarchy in Ukraine. And I think this is something that has to come out from under the covers. I mean, the whole Russiagate was a fraud that was partly a cover for using American money and American military capabilities to target Russia. And you know what they said is that the fact that Trump wasn't falling in line with that shows he's a Putin puppet. No, it shows that he's for the American people. And whatever criticisms I have of Trump with people like Pompeo and Bolton and others he brought in, he's been clear on this question of war. War is not good for America. It's not good for the world. And I think Biden, meanwhile, is going to be in trouble not only because of what's happening in Ukraine, but as the story of what the Israelis are doing in Palestine gets out more and more, the fact that we're arming a crazy settler faction of religious extremists in Israel is not going to help Biden either. So I think this question of war will be one of the dominant features. So what's their strategy? Use lawfare. Make Trump look like the most corrupt guy in history. And I think that's the only thing they can do because...
But that's kind of backfiring on them, though.
Well, it is because you saw Biden, the so-called command performance at the State of the Union.
Right.
To me, it looked like there were two things going on. One, they filled him up with Red Bull or amphetamines or something to prop him up so he wouldn't topple over during the speech. But the content of the speech was pure nonsense. It was the deep state war policy. And I think the people who are opposing that, especially in the Republican Party, need to be more aggressive in explaining why it is they're opposing this and why this fits into the, as we were just talking earlier, the economic collapse. You can't have a military power based on a collapsing economy. Ultimately, it will turn against the people in its own nation. And that's what's going to happen between now and November. The $60 billion, if they pass it, and more that will be done secretly beyond that,
right,
is going to come out of healthcare in the United States, out of roads, out of energy policy. And people are going to feel it.
Let me just go back a little bit, because the World Economic Forum about, I don't know, 2.5 years ago or so, they said that we're due for a cyber attack. Now, the World Economic Forum, they also said, you know, we're going to have a pandemic. So if they're talking about a cyber attack, do you think, and we're heading towards war, do you think as we approach the presidential election, do you think they'll try to use maybe a cyber attack to try to maybe postpone or manipulate or do whatever they possibly can to maybe stop the election?
Well, I would expect that a cyber attack would be part of a false flag.
Yeah.
That they would blame on Russia and would say, as Zelensky's doing, Zelensky's saying, well, we're in war. We can't have an election. Under conditions of the chaos that would be unleashed with a full-scale cyber attack, they would come out and say, you know, we can't have the election. But I think people should go back and look at what Edward Snowden was saying some time ago, where he warned that the post 9/11 policy was precisely that, to control all means of communication so that if necessary, they can move to a higher level of a secret state or a police state controlling the United States. That's what the whole narrative around the so-called insurrection is about. You know, we have to have tougher surveillance to make sure that the haters and the extremists don't pull a coup in the United States, when in reality, you could argue that the coup has already been pulled, and it was pulled by the Bush-Cheney crowd, the Obama-Biden crowd, and it's continuing with the Biden crowd today.
Hey, Harley, thank you very much for being on the X22 Report Spotlight. Once again, if people want to get in contact with you or look at your work, where should they go?
Well, two things you can do. One, I do a daily 10 to 12 minute video update, which has been seriously damaged by Facebook algorithms and so on in terms of the daily views. But it's always available at the LaRoucheOrganization.com website. Wow. You just click on programs and the first thing that pops up is Harley's Daily Report. So that's one thing people can do. If you want to get more detailed information, and by the way, it's free to sign up for that. And if you want more communication with me or to find out more about what we're doing, just write to me directly. And I have a lot of your viewers who are in contact with me regularly at harleysch@gmail.com. That's harleysch@gmail.com.
Great. I'll be putting all the links at the bottom of the video. Harley, once again, thank you very much for being on the Spotlight. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you for what you're doing, Dave.